Good afternoon. You are tuned into the Juno Afternoon here for Monday, the 8th of August, the year 2016. Jeff Brown here today. We'll be talking to fiddler Caitlin Warbelow about her concert tomorrow night at the Rockwell. We'll get an update on the first folio readings. We'll learn about the Learning Center with Jeffrey Smith. We'll get a preview of tonight's concert by Trampled by Turtles. That writer's almanac, Burnout News, good morning today on the Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures in the mid-50s, south winds to 10 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday, widespread rain showers with high temperatures around 60 degrees. Tuesday night, scattered rain showers with low temperatures around 50. Wednesday night, rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Surgeon General says deaths due to overdoses of heroin and prescription painkillers have tripled since 1990 and says a multi-pronged approach is needed to stop an opioid epidemic. As KNBA's Jacqueline Estes reports, the Surgeon General addressed the issue during a trip to Alaska last week.
U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says to cut record rates of opioid addiction, we need a fresh perspective. While drug abuse is sometimes linked to criminal activities, Dr. Murthy says the remedy is not necessarily more law enforcement, but easier access to treatment, counseling, and social services.
We have to recognize that addiction is not a bad choice. It's not a character flaw. It is a disease of the brain.
Most of rural Alaska is not accessible by road, so Murthy traveled by small boat to the western Alaska village of Neposkiak on the Kuskokwim River. There, he says, community health aids and video teleconferencing are helping boost access to care.
That's the kind of model I think we should be investing more in and expanding, so that we can empower people to be able to bring care to where people are, whether it's through a person, a community health worker, or through technology.
As for prevention, Murthy says he will be writing and sending information to physicians on ways to effectively treat pain while also stemming the flow of addictive prescription painkillers. Murthy was in Alaska as part of his nationwide Turn the Tide tour against opioid addiction. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Officials say tribes in the Dakotas have the potential to expand local food growing operations. Nutritionists working in Indian country say traditional values align with the goals of food sovereignty and sustainability. Discussions on those topics will take place this week at the second annual Tribal Foods Conference in Bismarck, North Dakota. Kenzie Wagner has more.
Wanda Agnew is a dietitian and instructor at United Tribes Technical College. She's speaking at the Tribal Foods Conference. Her presentation is called Connecting Mother Earth to Health at the Kitchen Table. It includes a food calendar.
Using indigenous words as well as some English words to support it show that there were not seasons like summer, winter, spring, and fall, and the months, of course, the English language. But based on the moons, everyone lived using local foods, and food really supported strength in a community. It supported the health of the community. It supported the villages being able to care for each other and all ages working together.
Agnew adds that she's not against scientifically engineered foods to support large populations, but she thinks it's still possible to have all natural food diets.
It's just so important that we go back to real food and that we teach the cultures and the traditions and the values and the memories that come with food. So there's much that can be pulled together with having people grow their own food.
The Tribal Foods Conference includes Agnew's presentation and other experts covering topics including growing and gathering food on tribal lands. For National Native News, I'm Kenzie Wagner in Rapid City.
Young people campaigning to protect water rallied in Washington, D.C. over the weekend after a nearly 2,000-mile-long run to the nation's capital from their home on the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. The youth departed for the journey in July. They're concerned the Dakota Access Pipeline poses a risk to the Missouri River and the health and safety of their community. The proposed pipeline would transport up to 570,000 barrels of crude oil per day, crossing North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois. Supporters of the project say it would help with energy independence in the U.S., create jobs, and boost the economy. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
And by Humboldt State University's online Master of Social Work program, which focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/social work.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our first guests here in the studio are Laura Haywood from the Juno Symphony and fiddler Caitlin Warblow. We're talking about her concert tomorrow night at the Rockwell. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jeff.
So you're a traditional fiddler, but you throw some classical music in as well.
Yeah, I'm classically trained. I started when I was 3 in the Suzuki program, and I did my degree in classical music, but then once I graduated from college, I decided the fiddling was way more fun, and that's what I do primarily now.
And you're an Alaskan. Your father's a bush pilot, and your mother's a vice principal.
Yeah, I'm from Fairbanks, and as you said, my dad was a bush pilot and owned a small air service up there for a number of years, and my mom is up there still being vice principal at North Pole High School.
Do you fly?
I do not fly. I would love to fly someday, but my dad was not in favor of kids learning to fly, so we never learned, but maybe someday we'll see. See how the fiddle career goes. Maybe I'll switch over.
How did you pick up the fiddle?
Well, my mom, I was going to say my mom made me. That doesn't sound correct, but I was 3 years old at the time, so I guess I was made to play. She was, we were all living in Boston at the time. My dad was going to school there, and she was looking for things for the kids to do, and we happened to walk down the street one day, and there was a public demonstration of little tiny kids playing violin, and she said, oh, that'd be a good thing for Caitlin to do, and here I am.
You're an award-winning fiddle player.
I've won a couple of awards.
And I was one prepared for a championship.
Well, the competitions that I have won are mostly in the fiddle realm, so all you have to do is kind of learn which types of tunes are required. There's different types of tunes required for the different competitions. And then I just pick my favorites, practice them up, and tried it out.
You make it sound like it's easy.
Well, I don't know. I've been playing for a long time, so I don't find it to be difficult these days, but I think my mom would probably disagree, all the practice that she had to listen to when we were little. I'm sure that was very difficult.
Well, did you make a transition to go from classical music to fiddler's style?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. A lot of classical musicians try to make that change, and it is hard because the technique is extremely different between the two genres of playing.
In what ways?
The way you hold the bow is different. The way you you bow on the string, in other words, how many notes you put on each draw of the bow, the ornamentation that you use with your left hand, the emphases on the notes are different. So you can be a great classical player and be a not-so-great fiddle player. So you really, the people who have made that change over have really studied in depth the genre that they're wanting to change over to. And I actually, in my case, I feel like I had to get rid of some of my classical technique in order to be a good fiddle player.
You're working on a 5-CD book.
Yes. Yes, the big project of the year. So actually, I just recorded one of the CDs up in Fairbanks this last week with an amazing band called Steve Brown and the Bailers. So the whole project was a Kickstarter project that I funded last year, and the idea is to make a 5-EP box set where each of the EPs is a different theme or genre. So the two that are halfway done or mostly done now are Steve Brown CD and then an Irish music CD. And then from there I'll move on to some other projects.
You also teach via Skype. How does that new technology affect your teaching, or does it at all?
Yeah, so I have to say, teaching by Skype is, I find it way more difficult than teaching in person because you can't do two very important things. One is you can't play together with the other person because of the delay on the connection, or usually there's some bit of delay. and you can't reach out and manipulate the person's hands into the correct position. So I do it occasionally, and usually I do it with people who live in places in the U.S. where they don't have a fiddle teacher. And so that the best option for them is to take Skype. So in those cases, it's an invaluable resource because you can take a lesson with anybody in the country, any expert that you want, and get the same type of teaching that you would if you lived in a big urban center.
You played with people in Riverdance.
Yes.
Talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I was involved with Riverdance's new show, which is called Heartbeat of Home. As you know, Riverdance has gone for, I don't even know how long now. It must be going on 30 years, I think. And a few years ago, they decided to write a new show, which incorporated a lot more genres of music, not just Irish music and a few others. So the show was actually mostly other types of music, including a lot of classical technique for the violin part, which is, I think, why I was selected to do the part. So the show ran in the U.S. for a little bit of time, and then it went over to China, and I think it's touring there now, but I did not go with them over to China. I wanted to stay in the U.S. and pursue things here.
The musical that you're working on now, Come From Away.
Yeah, I'm part of a new musical that just started up, its production run last year. It was in La Jolla Playhouse in California for a few weeks, and then it went to the Seattle Repertory Theater. That's where I joined them in the fall of last year. And it did very well. It broke a number of records at the Seattle Rep and got a very good reviews. And so now it's moving on to Ford's Theater, and then it'll be in Toronto, each of those places for 2 months, and then Broadway in February of 2017.
In these theatrical productions, is it an audition process, or is it who you know, and they know if you're a good player?
It's both of those things. Yeah, I find that a lot of the music jobs come from doing a good job at your previous gig and meeting other musicians and music directors who, you proved yourself to, and then the next time a job comes around, they might ask you to be in the show or ask you to audition for the show. So it's all just kind of like building blocks, moving through gigs, moving up the chain.
Are you the Eileen Ivers of this production?
Oh, I don't know if I could say that. I am the only fiddle player. It's an 8-piece band, and there's just one fiddle player. So I find that fun to kind of be the only fiddle player. But there are a number of other trad instruments and drum set, accordion, guitar, all those sorts of things.
How do you manage to incorporate fiddle playing with your degrees in urban planning and anthropology?
Well, I have not managed to incorporate urban planning with the fiddle playing, except that I live in New York City. Maybe that's the only kind of connection there. But anthropology, I have a degree in anthropology. I worked a job in it, but I have found that it has informed every aspect of my life, including music. And I often tell my students when they're learning to go and play in a jam session that they should be like anthropologists when they go in. They shouldn't just sit down and start playing away with their fastest, most showy tune. They should lay back and observe the situation and try to learn, for an hour or two about how the music works before they attempt to go and play it themselves. And I think that's a good rule for anybody. Whether you're a professional musician or an amateur, when you're entering a musical situation, to, have manners, observe what's going on, and then it makes it much more pleasant for everybody involved.
I'm talking with Caitlin Warblow. Also in the studio with us is Laura Rock. Laura Haywood.
Hey, Jeff.
So you want to give us the details about this show?
Yes. If now that you've listened to Caitlin for a while, you want to come to the concert, which is tomorrow night, Tuesday, and it's at Rockwell upstairs in the ballroom. That's on Franklin. And it's at 7 o'clock. Tickets are $20. You can get them at the door, but you might be smart to get them now. And they're in all the usual places like Hearthside and The Jack and online at jahc.org.
When you came by, you gave us a CD from the Manhattan Sessions.
Yes. And I think we'll play a track, but I should mention the two people that I'm playing with tomorrow before we go into that track. the guitarist is named Patrick Ducey. He's relatively new to the U.S., but he's one of the most incredible trad guitar players that I've run into in my career. And as soon as I heard him, I thought, I got to bring him to Alaska and have him play some gigs with us. And then the other person is Kevin Crawford, who is the flute player from the very famous Irish trad band Lunasa. So it's really a treat to have them both. They're both people that you would generally hear play at concert association concerts in concert halls. And this tour that we're doing in Alaska is all small venues, small listening venues. So it's really a treat for me to play with them, and I hope for the community to listen to them. So to answer your question, sorry, I didn't answer your question there. The Manhattan Island Session CD is a CD that I recorded, I produced and recorded a few years ago, and it was done at a number of Irish pubs in Manhattan. It is a live CD, so it sounds a bit different than the studio albums that most people are used to hearing, but it's meant to capture a moment in time, and it's what you would hear if you go to New York and go into a pub at midnight and, you know, Irish musicians are sitting there having a Guinness and playing some tunes.
And just waking up.
And just waking up and getting ready for the night ahead. Yes, exactly.
I just want to put in a quick plug just to let you know this concert benefits the Juno Symphony,
yes.
Which is a huge thrill for us. And it was brought to us by great people at Southeast Radiology Consultants, especially Dr. Teresa Shanley. And this is just a great way to serve the community, bring a
yes.
wonderful musician like Caitlin down, and I want all those young students playing classical violin, I want them to know, come and hear it, and know where they can go with that.
Absolutely. Too. That would be great.
Thank you, Jeff.
You want to talk a little bit about the CD?
Yeah, I think we're going to play the last track on the CD, which I don't have in front of me, but one of the tunes on it has a name that is my favorite tune name of all time, I believe, so I'll mention it. The tune is called Splendid Isolation. And I've always thought that was a good name of a tune for Alaska, because there's a lot of splendid isolation that goes on in Alaska. So I thought it would be fitting to play here in Juneau.
Kayla Warblow, thank you for coming by. Playing tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Rockwell Ballroom. Costs $20 per person. Get your tickets in advance and save yourself some worry. Thank you. Caitlin Warblow and friends. She'll be performing tomorrow night with a couple of her friends here in town for this concert Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the Rockwell Ballroom. Cost us $20 per person to get them at the usual locations. In the studio with me next, Jeffrey Smith from the Learning Connection. Thanks for coming by, Jeffrey.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff.
So, for people who do not know, could you describe the Learning Connection, where it is and how to...
Yeah, so the Learning Connection is downtown at 210 Ferry Way across from Marine Park. And we do adult education and adult services, so... My program is the adult education program. Most people know it as the place where you can go and get your GED, but it's a lot more than that. We also help people with career readiness. We help people work on their resumes, cover letters, interview skills. We also help people that are interested in taking the Accuplacer test and maybe want to brush up on their skills before they go to college, or perhaps they took the Accuplacer test and, you know, they want to go to university and they didn't quite do well enough and get placed in remedial classes, so maybe help them prepare, take it again, and get into college-level classes. And then there's a whole slew of other programs at the Learning Connection, like the JobX and MASS programs. One is for younger people, 16 to 24, and the other is for older people, 60 years and older, that are looking to have some job experience, so they'll get placed and have different job experiences. There's the Juno Construction Academy, which is actually just accepting enrollment right now for courses that are going to start in the fall. And you could find them online at the Learning Connection, www.circ.org/TLC.
It's about that CERC.
Yeah, it's CERC.
S-E-R-R-C.
Yeah, S-E-R-R-C.org.
And yes. You do a lot of computer classes.
Yeah, and there's also computer classes. That's going to be coming up. With the announcement of a different type of schedule, we used to do it 2 days a week. We're going to start offering a more of a workshop style. So rather than meeting twice every week for a month, you might meet for a longer session, less days out of the month, to sort of fill the need for people because it wasn't quite working. So we're going to try doing the workshop style instead and see if that works better for people. And we'll probably have different classes with like Excel and Microsoft Word and different computer skills that will help you in the work environment.
When you bring people in, or when people come in to learn, what level of instruction do they receive?
Yeah, it's sort of a wraparound style of instruction, I'd say, because it's almost like you have a personalized coach there for you for whatever it is that you walk in the door for. So somebody might walk in because they're a really low-level learner that really wants to get their GED, and it's been a long-term goal for them for a while. And so we might spend time, you know, from September through December trying to get them ready to take their GED tests. And then you might have somebody walk in the door who's ready to go from day one and is maybe ready to test from day one. So it really depends on the person that walks in the door. But you know that if you walk in the door at the Learning Connection that they're going to be there, people are going to be there to help you and try to get you on the right path and help you reach your goal.
Is there a cost associated with the program?
No, everything at the Learning Connection is free, which is, it's such a great community resource, the free computer classes, free GED prep, free for the Accuplacer, whatever it is, whatever service that's provided is free. Even the Juno Construction Academy, taking courses at the university, it's all free. So it's a great resource in Juno and also regionally. The adult education program serves Southeast region as a whole. So even in Ketchikan and Sitka, we're housed at the university there. And we have tutors in all rural communities as well. And we're always looking for more tutors in these communities. We're also looking for volunteers to help with our English as a Second Language program to help tutor. And we're actually hiring a position out at our learning center in Gruning Park right now. We're looking for a paid position, part-time position as a adult education instructor and a homework club out at Gruning Park, apartment G49. We have a learning center out there as well.
How many people take advantage of your classes?
It really varies. So last year we served over 1,000 people in different ways, you know, through all of our different programs. We had a great group of about 10 consistent people in our math class last from January through May. We had a pretty consistent group, and, you know, sometimes the numbers go up and down just depending on the month and depending on people's situation. You know, most people come to us, and it's our goal to have them there for a short term because we want to help them find employment. We want to help them achieve their goal and move on to the next thing. So that's our goal, is to get people in, but then help them get out and find employment or to move on to the next step for them.
How's it all funded?
It's funded primarily through grants. So we're funded through a federal grant that the state gets the grant and the federal government matches it. And then we also seek funding throughout the year from different grants, like the Juneau Community Foundation. We received a grant from them, and we're also just constantly looking for different sources because it's a tight environment, and trying to fund the program, a completely free program, can be a challenge. But, you know, mainly through the grants, and that's always something that's on our mind.
What's your success rate? How many people was it like for people to graduate from your program and go out and get employment?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard for us to measure success because people are in and then out, and we don't always have the follow-up. But the GED program has had, I believe we had 30 graduates last year in the GED program in Juneau, and more than that if we go out regionally. And it's just like you get these amazing stories. When I think about success, it makes me think about these individuals that walk in the door, like Dawn, who was referred from our partner at Clinkett and Haida. She was struggling with some personal issues, and she came to the Learning Connection, and she said, you know, it really helped build her confidence taking the classes and learning again. You know, she's in her middle-aged woman who, you know, was trying to get back to work, and she started coming into the Learning Connection, boosting her skills, and left with a job placement at Clinkett and Haida, working as a clerk in the court system. So I think success takes on many different forms at the Learning Connection. For some people, it's building their confidence. For the English language learner, it might be being able to make a phone call and leave an intelligible message. And for the GED graduate, to get that diploma and move on to the next step. So I think it takes a lot of different forms and for every different person, and it's just great to see and be a part of.
The way you're able to affect people's lives must give you more reasons to work.
Absolutely. I love going to work every day. And I think the people that walk in the door would tell you that, you know, the people that I've worked with and people that go to CERC, there's just great people that work at the Learning Connection. They're there because they want to help people. And it's really a good place to go if you want to, if there's a goal that you've had in mind that you've just been putting off and you want to, you know, take it by the horns and get started. You know, we have the free classes and the wraparound service where you really get to know the people that are there working, and they really want to help you, and, you know, they go the extra mile for you every day.
When are the classes offered?
The classes are going to be starting in September. September 6th is going to be the first day of class for the math classes. The week after, we'll have writing class start. We have two different levels of math class, and then we do the tutoring as well beyond that for people that have specific needs, like for the AccuPlacer. And we're going to have a current events and GED social studies class that's new this year, starting on September 6th. And most of the classes run Monday through Thursday.
During the day?
During the day. So it kind of varies. You can go to our website, again, www.serrc.org/TLC. And you can see the schedule there. Or you could follow us on Facebook. Just look up the Learning Connection. And that's a great way to keep updated on the new offerings.
Do you find that employers might forward people onto your program so they can become a more valuable person at their job?
Yeah, we do get a lot of referrals. That's one of the main ways that people walk in the door. We'll ask people, you know, how'd you hear about us? And a lot of times it's from a community partner like Clinkett and Haida, like the university. There's a lot of people that walk in the door because somebody said, go do this at the Learning Connection. Go take a computer class. Go work on your resume, go do this, go take a class in math so you can, you know, boost your skills in math. So that's a big way that we get people through the door, is through our community partners that we really appreciate sending people our way.
Cool. Jeffrey Smith, thank you for being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to add that I forgot to ask?
No, I just say, if it's been a goal for you for a while to get back into education and get working towards your goal, come into the Learning Connection, 210 Ferry Way. downtown across from Marine Park. Visit us on Facebook by searching the Learning Connection, or find us online at www.cerc.org.
Jeffrey, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 8th of August, 2016. 1899, on this date, the first refrigerator was patented. Before that, people used ice boxes, little wooden box lined with tin, insulated with cork or sawdust. But Albert T. Marshall came along and got a patent from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And in 1918, the Frigidaire Company was founded to manufacture home refrigerators. The market grew in the 20s and 30s, and then by the end of World War II, no modern kitchen was without one. It's the birthday of the novelist Valerie Sayers, born in Beaufort, South Carolina, 1952, best known for her novel The Powers, about Joe DiMaggio as he sets out on his historic hitting streak in 1941. She grew up in South Carolina, but her father was a Yankees fan. Valerie Sayers' advice to young writers is, have some fun, what the hell. It's the birthday of Sarah Teasdale, 1884, St. Louis, Missouri. She moved to Chicago. She fell in with the Poetry Magazine crowd, Harriet Monroe and Vachel Lindsay, who was in love with her. She was famous for her simple love poems, but she didn't want to marry Vachel Lindsay. She married a businessman from St. Louis. They lived in New York City, unhappy marriage. She divorced him, lived alone for the rest of her life in an apartment just two blocks from the one where she'd lived on Central Park West. And it's the birthday of Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, Washington, D.C., 1896. Lived in Cross Creek, Florida, where she wrote her best-known book, The Yearling, which was the best-selling book of 1938, story of Jody Baxter, farm boy, and his adopted deer. Recognized now as a young adult novel, but popular at the time among a general audience. Here's a poem for today by Dana Gioia, Cruising with the Beach Boys. So strange to hear that song again tonight, traveling on business in a rented car, miles from anywhere I've been before, and now a tune I haven't heard for years, probably not since it last left the charts back in L.A., 1969. Can't believe I know the words by heart, and can't think of a girl to blame them on. Every lovesick summer has its song, and this one I pretended to despise, but if I was alone when it came on, I turned it up full blast to sing along, a primal scream in croaky baritone, the notes all flat, the lyrics mostly slurred. No wonder I spent so much time alone making the rounds in Dad's old Thunderbird. Some nights I drove down to the beach to park and walk along the railings of the pier. The water down below was cold and dark, the waves monotonous against the shore. The darkness and the mist, the midnight sea, the flickering lights reflected from the city. A perfect setting for a boy like me, the Cecil B. DeMille of my self-pity. I thought by now I'd left those nights behind, lost like the girls that I could never get, gone with the years, junked with the old T-Bird. But one old song, a stretch of empty road, can open up a door and let them fall tumbling like boxes from a dusty shelf, tightening my throat for no reason at all, bringing on tears shed only for myself. Cruising with the Beach Boys, a poem by Dana Gioia from his 99 poems published by Grey Wolf Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles. at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
It's 39 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Eric Kiefner. He's been doing Shakespeare for the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, I'm just an assistant. I don't really know what I'm doing, but they let me organize two of these plays, and I've been reading in some of them. It's been a lot of fun. I think we're about halfway through. We've got about halfway done. We're reading 35 plays because they're all in the first folio, which is now visiting the Andrew P. Kasheverov Museum. We're having a first folio from Washington, D.C., the original edition that Shakespeare's friends and fellow actors put together after he died, and it's quite an exciting edition to have in Juneau. There's only 235 copies, or 200-something copies of this book in the world, and Juneau has one visiting us right now. You should go down and see it.
How many... six venues around town.
Yes, there are. We are doing this every day of the week except Sunday. The Jack, the Egan Library at UAS, Rockwell's Restaurant downtown, the Valley Library out in the Valley, and then the State Museum, the APK, and finally at McFeeters Hall on Saturdays. Saturdays they've been doing marathons, so this Saturday, I'm afraid you missed it, but it was Henry the Fourth, Part 1 and 2, and, Henry the Sixth? Did I get that wrong? Oh, yes. No,
it's Hanks.
No, it was Richard the Second, Henry the Fourth, Part 1 and 2, and Henry the Fifth this Saturday. Next Saturday will be Henry the Sixth, Part 1, 2, and 3. Not as well-known a play, but we're trying to do the entire folio justice, so we got to do all of them.
Did you have much of a chance to practice?
No. There's no requirement that you practice these. I have read the plays beforehand because I was an English major, so I had to read them all. But some of them I hadn't read for a long time. It is helpful to read them ahead of time if you're going to be reading. Even if you're just going to come listen, it's more fun to kind of know what's up. But there's no obligation to read them ahead of time. I read for Love's Labor's Lost without any preparation at all, so that was kind of a surprise. But either way, it's fun.
What are the reception from the crowds like?
I think we've had a good reception. I was part of the Macbeth reading on Friday night. It was First Friday, so there were a lot of people wandering around downtown, and it was kind of a nice evening, so I'm surprised we got people to come in, but there were probably 30 people there from all around town, and it was at the State Museum. Macbeth, as you know, is pretty bloody, but it's short. It's a very short play, so we didn't lose anybody. I know I've been a couple other readings where there's been some attrition as we went through the night, but we've had anywhere from 2 people in the audience to 30 in the audience, and I think it depends on what the play is. It depends on what time of day it is and the day of the week, but it's been great. There's always been somebody.
Which is the fact that you're doing it is notable.
Yeah. No, it's a marathon to get through all of these. I know we've done what's called bardathons before, where people simply read the plays back to front and they go 24 hours. I've also participated in a reading of Paradise Lost that was round the clock. This is more fun because it's a little more opportunity to actually listen to the play and try and get some acting in instead of simply trying to get through it. One thing we do is we bring out a few props, and I think often we've been reading the stage directions to give people some idea of what's going on, because when people are sitting reading a book, it's hard to get a picture of what's happening on stage. So it's more dramatic that way.
And this goes on until the 24th of this month.
I think the 20th. Do you have something more on the 24th?
That could be when the book is displayed.
Right. The book is displayed until the 24th, and our plays are being read until the 20th. So we're winding up with The Tempest on August 20th at 7 p.m. at McPheeters Hall. That's going to be a great ending. It's not just our readings of the plays, although that's all I've been involved with. There are lectures and people talking about the text coming up. Oh, yes, Jim Hale gives a talk on Wednesday and on Thursday. Nina Cordes gives a pre-reading lecture on Friday. And there's just a bunch of things. So check our schedule. Check on I don't know where you find it. Maybe at the museum schedule, the museum website, but not hard to find. Just
I got it written down here.
Okay. You tell me.
lam.alaska.gov/FirstFolioAlaska.
I think that's, library and museum staff. There we go.
All right, Eric Kiefner, thank you for coming by. When's the next play?
Next play is tonight. Tonight is All's Well That Ends Well at 7 p.m. at the Jack. So come on down. There's also Antony and Cleopatra tomorrow night at the UAS Egan Library at 7 p.m.
And look on the web for more information.
Eric, exactly.
Thanks for coming by.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. We're at a remote lake in northern Ontario, relaxing, being renewed by nature. Ospreys, large fish-eating hawks, circle about. Yet life for them at this time of year, with the demands of parenthood, is no picnic. Hear their juveniles calling for food? Ospreys nest near the water in a tall tree, where they're exposed to all the elements, including direct sunlight, which can sometimes produce scorching temperatures. Today, though, a different hardship is brewing.
We've got to take cover. Here, let's get into this boat shed. Can't you feel the pounding? How did those birds take it? They're so exposed. This storm shower alone must be a good 20 minutes. The storm's passed. Droplets gleam, then slip from the leaves. We can go back to our cabin, curl up with a book. But the ospreys? No, it's back to feeding those hungry young. Join BirdNote on a trip in the Amazon River Basin in January 2017, and you might see ospreys in their winter habitat. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
It's 47 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Joel Probst and Jane Lindsay from the Juno Douglas City Museum. Thanks for coming by. Here to talk about a concert that's coming up in just a few hours.
Yeah, we are. Travel by Turtles at Centennial Hall.
For people who don't know, can you describe Travel by Turtles?
Yeah, they're definitely a bluesy, rocky, bluegrass music, good vibes, positive vibrations. It's very much a dance, feel liberated kind of scene. So it's perfect for the summer, it's perfect for a rainy day, it's perfect for Juno in early August before we see what's coming up, September, of course.
And it's all acoustic, right, Joel?
It is acoustic. Of course, it's plugged in, so there is electricity pumping through the place.
Of course, yeah.
How did all this come about, Jane?
As you know, I work at the Juno Douglas City Museum, and our friends group, Joel is the president. And Joel, how did this all come about?
This is the third time, actually, that Trampled by Turtles has been in Juneau. So this is the third time we've done this show. All their shows have been benefit shows in Juneau, so pretty interesting, pretty unique from that aspect. And this year it just kind of happened. They contacted me, said they're interested in coming back up, and I've been volunteering at the museum with Jane for almost six years.
I think so.
And then I got on the Friends board, and I was like, hey, you know, I got this kind of opportunity. I think you guys might be interested. We should check it out. Hopefully raise, $5 or $6. And we can help, of course, support, promote, and protect the City Museum, which is the ultimate goal of the entire benefit, and specifically, of course, the beer garden. So thank you very much to the Alaskan Brewing Company, and as well to Louise Douglas Inn. So there will be drinks available. Of course, bring your ID, and don't try to bring it over the line.
One of my questions is, where did the name Trampled by Turtles come from?
Oh, the name Trampled by Turtles? I have no idea. I wish I did. But I will ask them the next time I see them.
And then come back here and come on there and tell us all.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. I could Google it, too, real quick and tell you like I knew.
Thanks. I went down to the concert start. Doors open at 7:30?
Yeah, doors are open at 7:30. Will call tickets. So if you purchased a ticket online, either through the band, through the website Applause, or through FOJDCM.org, which is our organization's website, all those tickets will be available beginning at 6 p.m. today in the lobby of Centennial Hall. And then the doors will open up at 7:30, show at 8:30. And, of course, tickets will be available at the door. After 4 p.m. today, it will be the only way to secure those tickets is at the door. Cash only, please.
And how much are tickets?
Tickets there will be $35.
Cool. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Just a little bit about the Friends group and how they have been supporting the museum. The last effort was they led the charge on a $65,000 project to buy 3 new quality exhibit cases for the museum. And they pledged $10,000, and we were able to raise the funds all from the community, and then we wrote a Rasmussen Tier 1 grant for $25,000. So they're a pretty important group to the City Museum, and they really do benefit everyone who comes to the museum and also is a part of our Juneau history. And then before that, when they were first incorporated in 2009, they helped buy a Sidney Lawrence painting for our permanent collection, Early Morning Juneau, that was actually painted here in Juneau. So it's a great group, and would really appreciate everyone coming out and supporting the City Museum and the Friends, and also just having a good time and hearing some really good music.
Let's talk about the museum a little bit. What are its hours this summer?
Sure. Our hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. And on Saturday is 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Have you been getting – has it been a busy summer for you?
You know, it has been a busy summer. And what's really great is we're getting a lot of visitors who are in town for a couple of days, and they're really enjoying all of the cultural facilities. So they're stopping at our museum. They're, of course, going down to the new – fabulous Alaska State Museum and their complex. They're also stopping at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and they seem to really enjoy the content at our museum, and it's great. It's great that they're moving around the town, and they really care about the history or our story and how we relate to Alaska and as a community. So we're not doing too badly.
Is there anything for you to tell which exhibit has been the most popular? Or would piece of Juneau's history?
Sure. Well, the hands-on mining room is really popular, and this year we added a rocks and minerals identification touch activity. So we took 10 rocks and minerals. We worked with Kathy Connor and Mike Blackwell, and we identified 10 rocks and minerals from our area, and we put them on cubes. We kind of inset them into cubes, and then the rest of the sides of the cubes, you can turn them to find out local information, geology, and any Juneau history. And then with that, we had so much information that we built 3 books. And one is, we really want us to talk about Tlingit uses of stone as well, because it's kind of fascinating, and also Juneau mining history. And then it was really fun to just get into geology in general, because it's just such a science. So that's actually been really popular this year, and people have really been enjoying it. And the other thing we have is a David Woody exhibit of his. It's called New Work. And, you know, he's a really sophisticated painter. And I was able to put out three books to be companion pieces to his work. And interestingly enough, the books that seemed to fit the best with his work were like Caravaggio, Salvador Dali, and, of course, Edouard Manet. So, and I think it's not very easy for anyone's work to stand up to those great artists. But if you come in and you look at his work and you sit down and you look at some of these books on some of our most incredible painters through time, his work stands up beautifully. And I just think it's a pretty sophisticated community for painting, and it makes me very proud, because I have a background in the arts, to look at his work and say, wow, this is happening here in Juneau, and it's all his, and here are his influences. And in fact, we will be back in a couple of days, because he is going to have a lecture this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the museum, showing some images of his influences on his paintings.
All right. And Joel, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Let's go over the details about the tickets again, please, Joel.
Yeah, you can get the tickets today. Show up. You have until 4 p.m. to buy them online, so you have approximately 6 minutes to still get them at applause, trembleby.turtles.com, and also at fojdcm.org. Afterwards, you can always come down and see us beginning at 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall there in the main lobby. $35 at the door. If you did buy them online, your tickets are on will call. We have your name. Just please bring an ID, and we'll take care of you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. We'll be right back.
past 4 o'clock and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures in the mid-50s. Forecast for Tuesday, widespread rain showers. Forecast for Tuesday night, scattered rain showers. Forecast for Wednesday, rain with high temperatures around 60 degrees.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay.